Yeah, I mean, I think the best coaches are able to make the student also their own coach when you're not. Mm-hmm. And it is to the point of what you just described as far as using the technology on their own, all the way to something as simple as like, in general, when your ball goes left, this is why. In general, mm-hmm. if you hit it fat, this is why. And these are the drills to get back on track.
Hey folks, Captain Juice here. If you want to catch a tarpon, come see me with Shadowcaster Charters. If you want to get better at golf, which we all do, follow the Dew Sweeper at Dew Sweeper TV.
All right, joining me here on the tour, Coach. First time I've actually got to sit down and talk with him. I've had the opportunity a week or so ago to meet Devin Boneright. Been wanting to meet you for a good while. Follow you, obviously, with Golf Pass, Golf Channel, and all that stuff. And the filming day, there wasn't a lot of time to stop and talk. That was the most intense. I told my wife, that was the most intense 6-7 hour day I've had in a long time, filming for Golf Pass. Yeah, doing that, you got to be, it's like a marathon runner.
Yeah, they're true professionals. Well, first off, thanks for having me on. I've been wanting to chat with you as well. Even that day, I was like, man, I didn't even get the chance to talk to Tony. But yeah, I mean, it's they're the best in the business for a reason. I mean, they've done instruction for a long time, and they're great at getting, you know, a ton of really good quality content in a very efficient manner. I mean, when we film the Golf Fix, it's just incredible to me, like, in 7 to 8 hours, how tired I am at the end of the day.
Yeah.
if I go home right after and lay down, I'll be out for the night. So, I feel you 100%.
Yeah, man, I was like, whew, that was, it, you know, to me, because it was like, it was very interesting because, you know, I say, like, if you teach 6-7 lessons in a row, you're like, you have to be on every, you know, a person's paying you for an hour and they're there.
Sure,
for an hour
totally.
You know, it was very similar to that, only it was a little bit faster pace and everything. And then when you factor in the prep, it was a lot of work, a lot of fun, but also really gives you a lot of respect as a teacher for the guys like you to do that all the time. Right. Cause like,
thanks, man. Appreciate
you know,
that.
I mean, really is. And it's way harder. I used to always tell me like, it's way harder than people think. It's easy for teachers to sit at home, watch Golf Channel and pick apart guys doing it until you've actually stood in the shoes and had to do that. It's way harder than people think.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, even sometimes I'll say something I kind of misspeak and I'm like, oh, I want to re-say this, but it just doesn't work with like the production. And so it's always that tough battle of like making sure you're getting across the most mm-hmm. accurate information possible, doing it, in an articulate way, but at the same time, not slowing everybody up. So it's to your point, like, it's not like it's exactly how you would expect it to be, where you can just kind of redo it a million times and be like, okay, right. This is how I want it to be. I wish it was, but you know, it's just how it works.
I know there was one in my first run. It was obviously my first go around doing it. So I was the newbie and I was nervous a little bit. The first one was I was in the driver station. I mean, I'm 54. I hadn't stretched. I had to hit a driver first thing. I stumbled going through it. I looked like a 70-year-old man hitting a tee ball. But anyways, it was a lot of fun. Want to jump to you though. First of all, super thankful. Appreciate you. I know you got a lot of stuff going on.
Always. Thanks for having me.
Talk a little bit about, I'm always fascinated with teachers. You know, I had a great mentor in Hank Johnson, who was a PGA Teacher of the Year, and Mark Wood and Wayne Flint, some of these great older guys. And talk a little bit about your upbringing. I'm fascinated how teachers get to where they are. I always like hearing that because I think where you come from and the people that have influenced you are a huge part of who you are today and the information that you give out to people.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Massive. I would in no way be even close to where I am today. I'm not saying it's anywhere special, but if I didn't have the mentors that I have. So, I started off, I mean, it was really my love for golf came working with an instructor named Jim Wilkinson. He's an Oregon and Southern California guy, played on the senior PGA Tour. Great player. Really big in Oregon. And, he basically took me from, I didn't really play competitive golf until my junior year in high school.
Oh, wow.
I played a little bit. I was a big basketball fan, kind of came to the conclusion that I would never really be in the NBA due to stature and whatnot. Just loved golf, fell in love with it. You know, your score says how good you are. It's not what the coach says. It's not how many charges you'll take. It's any of those types of things that I was dealing with. I went from, and this is just a good, testimony for a lot of people that are trying to get better and wondering if they can. I mean, I think my junior year, I was on JV. My scoring average for the year, pretty sad to say this, was like 53, I want to say, for 9 holes. Like, okay. Very, very, very entry level. just worked with Jim Wilkinson all year as hard as I possibly could. He started to really see the work ethic, so he started giving me some great deals on lessons, like, hey, unlimited amount if you pay me this much, not realizing I was going to come like every single day. next year on varsity, I think I averaged 76 for the season, which is a huge jump from where it was before. And the next year, I think I played at an NAIA school, a smaller school, I was averaging like 74, and then junior year, 71. So it kind of just progressively got better. I think due to late start, I never was able to quite play at the professional level above like the Golden State Tour or anything like that. But it just really made me fall in love with instruction, because I was like, I have to catch up to everybody. Like, how do I outsmart them? How do I outwork them? How can I just practice in a more efficient manner? Which I think as coaches is what we're trying to teach all of our players, is like, hey, the average guy on the range is going to hit 100 balls in 40 minutes. He's probably going to do zero rehearsal swings based on a false premise on top of all that. And so they're wondering why, you know, they shot 85 for the last 10 years. Like, I think golf is the only sport where you could play it 2 to 3 times a week and be the same handicap for 10 years straight. Like, if you did anything else 2 to 3 times a week for 10 years, you'd be really, really good at it. And that's not always the case in golf. So started with him. He referred me down, you know, right after college. I was like, I want to teach. And he's like, you got to work for McLean. He's like, McLean's the guy. He's like, you got to go to PJ West. You got to work for McLean. So I hustled my way in there somehow, started working at La Quinta Resort and PJ West for him. Fortunately, was able to spend some time with him. He really realized how much I like just loved instruction. I knew his stuff inside out and backwards, as he would say. So invited me to Doral. That's where I moved to Miami, worked for him at Doral. Was his personal teaching assistant at Doral, which is a very cool experience. A lot of guys have done it. They all know it's not the easiest thing in the world. You know,
he's intense. That's intense.
He's excellent because he walks the walk. Let me put it that way. But it's still hard. And so, yeah, it was great. I mean, I got to spend time with him teaching Lexi Thompson, Keegan Bradley, Greg Norman, a lot of other Eric Compton, a lot of other stars at the time. And really just, you know, it just solidifies like, hey, I really obviously respected him, as a lot of people do. And it was like, hey, if he's teaching this, like, this is okay to teach it. And you kind of just start to pick up, and I'm sure you agree too, Tony, like just their mannerisms, how they talk, how they organize their lessons. And whether you're his assistant or not, like working for Jim is like just a, you're basically getting your PhD in how to be an instructor. He really lays it out, how to film, how to talk, how motor learning works, you know, how to process the change, like the three steps, all those different things. And so, you know, even the marketing side, you know, pro means promoter, Jackie Burke, like all the type of stuff. So it was kind of cool because I got a great kind of like just solid foundation, but also a little bit of the old school with the Ken Venturi, Jackie Burke influences, that Hogan influence that he had. And, you know, although he had the energy of a, you know, 21-year-old, it's not like he was 21 when I worked for him. So he just had some great insight.
Still and, does. You know, he still works. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And then I worked for him at his International Junior Academy in Fort Worth. Some two great coaches there that I really love spending time with. Joey Wurtenberger. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah.
Super, super coach. Top 100. Well-deserved. And then Justin Pointer, also a great coach. So worked with them for another, I think, 6 years after that. So it was a great start. It was like 9 years under McLean in, you know, kind of his system, and eventually reached a point where it was just kind of like, okay, I got not everything I could possibly get, but a lot of what I could get. I always wanted to go back to California. So ended up going back to California and, you know, from there just got really involved with TPI, with TrackMan. I don't know if they still do it, but TrackMan used to do like this master TrackMan certified. So I did that. I was at the time, I was the only one in California to do it. And so, you know, the influences was kind of stemmed from kind of that old school, you know, McLean also, which was great, really told us to go see other coaches. So I spent a lot of time going to see like Jim Hardy, Mike Bender, Jim Flick, guys that, you know, like just obviously paved the way, and it was such geniuses in so many different ways, and also had and also kind of thought about it differently, which was kind of cool. Like, you go and see Bender, and then you go and see Hardy, and Hardy's teaching like a one plane pull fade and aiming right, and Bender's teaching to aim left, hit a push draw, but they're both kind of like lower arms at the top. You know, it was just so interesting. And so, yeah, it was just great to like kind of experience all these different legends and kind of see how their head worked and how they communicated. And, you know, Flick obviously was amazing. Lucky to spend some time with him before he unfortunately passed. But yeah, it's a combination of everybody, you know, and just reading books, obviously. And now it's kind of funny. Like, you kind of, I think, just with stuff like this, like podcasts, you just kind of pick up little tidbits. Like, just, I don't, it's not like it used to be where you read a whole book and you're like, oh, this is cool. Like, I read, you know, John Jacobs, or I read this or that. It's like, you just kind of like pick up some different things. You might even just see a drill and you're like, oh shit, that's a different way to think about it. I've
right.
do that drill, but I do that drill this way. This is actually a better way to do it because I run into XYZ problems. So that's kind of where I would say, that's a very long answer, but that's kind of where I would say my influences have been. You know, and then I think what's also been cool is just teaching at a variety of places. You know, Doral and PJ West were like resorts. So you kind of got that golf school, people come in, you know, you'd be super intense with them, you know, junior league camps, you know, spend time with these kids for a week. And then they'd leave and they'd come back. And then Fort Worth was more of like long-term development. Like, you'd be with these guys for a year straight, you control their schedule. I mean, you know, lunch till 9 p.m., you could tell them exactly what to do. And then I've been at a range in a country club where it's a little bit more of like, all right, I'm going to see you once a week and we're going to develop your game. And these are some of the things you should do. And, you know, a club, which I totally get, people tend to play a lot more golf. So sometimes the changes, like the technical changes at least, are a little bit slower. So you kind of got to work on short game and course management and mental a little bit. And I think a range is almost the opposite. A lot of times people that are range rats, like, don't play as much, and they just kind of, even if they didn't need to work on their swing, I think they still would almost type people. So it's been cool just to be at these different locations, kind of see it. And now I pretty much just teach, aside from the golf pass stuff, indoors. We'll talk about, I'm sure, that more later, but started a company called Studio Golf. And, you know, really the idea here is just giving people access. The biggest challenge I found teaching at a club and just in general is people's ability to understand when they're not with you, if they're doing something correctly or not. Mm-hmm. And people's also initiative to want to actually create stations or video themselves or do the things that we know is very helpful, but, you know, and it's one thing, it was in a lesson and they're kind of set up for you. So we just try to create a base essentially that would be able to really couple with the instruction, where it's like, hey, when I'm not here, you still can look at your path and face. You can still look at your video. If we use Sportsbox, so I can still look at your sway numbers. And it could be as simple as, hey, your low point's back and your pelvis shift coming down is only 1 inch forward of where you started. So we know that you need to be a little bit more forward than that. And just put that number on the screen, and every time you hit, you just know. And it's very easy to, you know, see the cause and effect. So that was kind of the myth and error was that. But, you know, it all kind of derived from just those early, you know, mentors and people in the industry that were just always, you know, so successful.
You know, a couple things that you said that really interested me there to touch back on first was, you know, you talked about, you know, those people. I think with nowadays, there's so many folks get into teaching golf, and you don't, I guess the path now isn't always to go be mentored by somebody that's been successful. And while there's lots of information out there and stuff, like, I'm as guilty of it as anybody putting all this shit out there. But I think the one thing that you do learn when you work for somebody like Jim, or like I did with Hank, like, you learn to be a professional. And you learn how to structure, and it's not just the info, but like, you learn how to learn, you learn how to structure a lesson, you learn how to structure a plan for a person. And I think that's something that in this day and age, with all the great stuff technology has done, like that personal of where you really learn. And then, you know, I've listened to you talk about these people, and you can tell the affection you have for them, right? And the appreciation, and people that listen to me, it's the same for my mentors. And that's part of it. I guess it makes me feel like an old person, but like, you know, or sentimental, but like, that's the one part that I wish young teachers coming up, while it's easy to buy a TrackMan or a Sportsbox and jump out there on a tee, or even now, like, so many folks go and open an indoor places, but like, take some time to really work for somebody that's been successful. I think that's a huge advantage for you, even if you just do it for a year or so, but like, you can really learn some stuff other than just the information about the golf swing.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more, and I totally understand, you know, and it'd be interesting to see what I would do mm-hmm. in this day and age if I was that same age. You know, would I still think I would need to do that? But, you know, I think back then, and obviously well before me too, like, you just really had to earn it. Like, it wasn't like you could just go ahead and just start coaching. Like, you had to work for the right guy. You had to work your way up. You know, a lot of times you'd have to start with, you know, juniors or beginners, and then all of a sudden then you get some better players, and then the word would spread. And, you know, I think that that's terrific. And I think, you know, all the information in the world, but the application of the information is what the people are paying you for. They're not paying for you to have this knowledge. And so I think a lot of that can only be done through having the right premise and upbringing. And then on top of that, having enough reps doing it. You know, I think getting information, posting stuff online is great, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to apply it to anyone that walks in front of you. And knowing a lot of drills is great. I mean, obviously I do a ton of drills on my show, but you know, the drills is just like a weapon that you have to apply to the right person, and making sure you convey, you know, that drill with the right reasoning and idea behind it is kind of really more the teaching side and getting the person to believe in it and buy into it and all that sort of stuff.
And, you know, you talked about there, especially why you opened the place you have and about the feedback and the ability for the student or the player to have access to that. I love that, because I always stress when, you know, I have a new student and you're in the, you know, the phase where you're talking a little bit and you're telling about what the plan. And I always say, like, my goal for a lesson is to teach you, you know, what's the main thing that's wrong, that's causing the most other crap to happen, teach you how to work on it. But then the third to me, that's most important, is how to monitor it on your own when you leave me. Right. Whether it's a, like you talked about drills, and Lord knows we filmed a zillion of those a couple of weeks ago. Or like you said, or like to me, educating, you know, a 60-year-old person that's crazy about getting better, how to use it, whether it's sports box or a camera on their phone to monitor what they're doing. And I think that's a powerful tool for those of us in our business now. And obviously you're taking advantage of it there, but using the technology to help them monitor what they're doing and coach themselves so they actually can get better.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best coaches are able to make the student also their own coach when you're not. Mm-hmm. And is to the point of what you just described, as far as using the technology on their own, all the way to something as simple as, like, in general, when your ball goes left, this is why. In general, mm-hmm. if you hit it fat, this is why. And these are the right drills to get back on track. If you see that shot, do this drill and then repeat and see if it changes. And if it does, you're going to feel like you're in control of your own outcome and destiny, which I think is very empowering for the person that's practicing. And the opposite is also true. You feel like you're hitting bad shot after bad shot and you keep trying things that don't work, then you're going to feel lost and generally deviate from maybe the plan or whatever. So I think that part is just as important as giving them actually the right information, is making sure that they stay on track. And what I think I've found over the years seems so obvious and logical to you, of like, yeah, it went left, it's just this, just your path or just your face, just your ball position, whatever it might be. You know, it's new to them. So it's not like something that immediately is going to just be super intuitive all the time. So I think, you know, just really going over that and letting them understand, okay, like, this is exactly what's going to sometimes happen. When this happens, it's because of this, and this is how you fix it. It's not a deal. We'll get you back on track. So, I think that that's a huge part. And I mean, as much as in some ways I feel like, you know, especially working for Jim, I mean, he would say the same thing, you know, he's a golf instructor, he's not a coach, but I do think there's a huge coaching aspect to doing what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, and he would read books from John Wooden, from Phil Jackson. I mean, just to kind of help with that aspect of what we, you know, are doing in front of these people. And it's, I think, not just telling them what they're doing wrong and what they need to do instead, but it's really showing them a pathway of how do you get there? And if you get mm-hmm. off, how do you get back on track?
Well, two of my biggest influences are, I went to an NAIA school.
Cool.
Now right. Now they've moved to D2. You know, a lot of NAIA schools have done that. But at the time, he's passed away, but the basketball coach, I would always sit behind the bench. I loved college basketball, and I would sit there in this old alumni gym, and I got to know the basketball coach, and Coach Meyer I was a good bit away from home, and he would take me to baseball games and stuff. But like, I loved sitting there watching him coach. Right. And I think that was one of the things that really motivated me to want to do what I do. Like, I actually was more enamored with or really liked coaches more than I liked the good players I was around. I had great teachers and golf instructors coming up. And then I was fortunate to be around like Coach Myers and folks. And I always liked those people almost more than I really liked, you know, liked the player. So I think that's a good part of why I'm at least decent, I guess, at what I do. But when you look back at where you were in high school, I think that story is fascinating, because like you as that kid that walked on the range there and shot 50 or whatever for 9 holes is so much like a huge portion of the people that walk on our tee the first time.
Right.
And and we all have these stories, but like, I mean, if more people knew that they could go from where you were to where you became as a player, I think more people would take instruction seriously. And I think they would even more love the game more than they do. And they, people that love the game are crazy passionate about it. But what, to you, when you look back on that, what have you taken from that part of your journey to help you coach and develop players now?
That's a good question. I've never been asked that.
I sneak a good one in every now and then.
Yeah, you certainly do. I'm sure there's more coming too. I think just that there's always hope. You know, whether you want to, you know, use that as an example of, you know, such a high scoring average to, you know, a pretty respectable scoring average in a short period of time, to just, you know, the older person who just like feels like they've been to 100 coaches and they just can't get better. And just, it might just be that one way you describe it, or you just sticking with them a little bit longer that suddenly makes them have that kind of aha moment. I think that's something that I'd always kind of pride myself on, is just like never giving up on anybody and just kind of thing, always feeling like there's hope. And a lot of times, you mean, you stick it out long enough, obviously some people have a sharper trajectory upwards than others, but I think I've just always found that there is going to be some success. And for the most part, success is relative too. You know, if people have never seen any success and they see a little bit, like they're going to be ecstatic. And vice versa, if someone's super talented and they're always successful, like they're not going to be too happy with, you know, not seeing that success. So I think just, you know, always pushing forward, always having hope, and always knowing that, you know, you can get better.
I think that, you know, too, success is different for different people, right? And, you know, everybody thinks it's glamorous to work with folks, guys or girls that are playing for a living. But, you know, to me, some of the most rewarding lessons are, you know, those club members or those recreational golfers. I had a lady in the other day, yesterday, Lisa, that, you know, I mean, heck, she's just gotten crazy about it, and senior golfer, and heck, she started getting to where she hit the ground in front of the ball and was launching her 7-iron up and hitting it, you know, and hitting it 95 yards. Right. And she hit 5 in a row and said, "Hey, that's enough Tony time. This is awesome." Right. Like, you know, but like, I don't think I'll ever get tired of doing that. I don't want to be the guy that just works with really good players. Cause that, like, the excitement that you get from those people is contagious.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I mean, obviously there's more room there too, right? So more improvement. So, I mean, the best tour coaches are able to take the very, very, very elite and make them this much better, which then obviously makes them the best or one of the best in the world. And that's an incredible skill. Whereas with what you're describing, you know, you might take them from, you know, say from a tour player's perspective, a shot that's a 1 out of 10, and you get them to a 4 out of 10, and they feel like it's a 10 out of 10. Right. And they just couldn't be happier. It's like, you know, the first time someone makes a hole in one almost. So, you know, I love that. I love, you know, getting people past something they think that they'll never be able to do, I think is really, really cool, and something that we can do in golf. And a lot of it obviously isn't so, some of it's physical, but a lot of it is just technical. And if you can kind of convey it and get them to do it the right way, they can see incredible changes, in distance and accuracy and contact and all those types of things that, you know, for years on end, maybe they've never felt like they're able to do.
Curious how you found teaching inside. You know, I think it's different. It's much different. I have a little studio in Mobile, Alabama, that's nothing like what you have there. But I have a swing catalyst and, you know, it's in sports box and do some of that. And to me, when I first transitioned to do it, it was different, right? Like it took a little different approach. Curious how, but I do like that. I think you can reach a bigger mass of people by doing it, because whether they're members or they're not members, or the ability to come after work when you maybe couldn't at a golf course, stuff like that. Curious, like, what you found and how, if at all, has it changed or impacted how you teach or how you reach people?
Yeah. I mean, I think I totally agree with you. I think the accessibility is super helpful for some people, right? Like, you know, it's depends on where they live, but in some cases, especially, you know, great coaches like yourself aren't going to be the closest. So proximity plays a big role. And if you can be, not always, but generally, it's a little bit more difficult to be in the middle of a city center on a golf course. There just aren't as many anymore. It's very expensive, obviously, very expensive land. So usually they're driving a little bit, where here, you know, you kind of, you potentially can be, you know, you'd be 5 minutes away from their home. But I would say, to answer your question originally, I think that it allows the players to be a little bit less focused on the result of the ball itself, yeah, and a little bit more focused on the data that can sometimes, not always, but can result in a better ball flight and impact, which is obviously the end goal. But I like that we can make other things the prize versus necessarily always just the shot. And it's something we've all told for, you know, heard for a million years, like, you know, if you're too result oriented, to this or that, well, it can still be result oriented, but just shift what the result is. And especially with sports box, one thing that's cool is like, they don't even have to hit a ball. So we can just be like, hey, can you make a swing and do this? And I want this number to be green. And it was red. And then like, oh, look, it's green. Yeah. Sure. You know, and then path and face stuff like, hey, like, I know that went a little right, or this and this wasn't good, but like, you know, if we're focusing on, let's, you know, to be honest, right? Like, what needs to happen for there to be a good shot? I mean, decent path to face ratio, we'll call that two things. Reasonable attack angle, given the lie. Centerness of contact and speed. Like, you got those things, it's a good shot.
Yeah.
And so, like, you can show people, like, hey, like, yeah, like, the club got a little out there and it was a little on the heel, and so, like, that's why it felt like that. But, like, your other parameters were great. Like, that was actually a pretty good swing with not the best result. Let's give it another shot. If we get in the center with that same swing, it's going to be a lot better result. And then a lot of times they will, right? And you put a little barrier and do something that maybe they wouldn't do normally. Love yoga blocks and things like that. Kind of guide them a little. Sometimes it's like this much from them being actually, you know, hitting a really, really good shot. And so I think that part I really enjoy. I feel like I miss certain things for sure. And I still do some on-course stuff and whatever. But for the most part, it's inside. So I definitely miss like the short game stuff and just being out on the course and outside in good weather. And I don't think anything really beats that in some ways. But you know, the instruction stuff, swing stuff especially, I like better inside. I mean, I just think I see results faster. I feel like people focus on the right things more. And we can quantify their improvement a lot better than just the shot itself. So
I think to me, yeah, one of the when I first moved to inside, like there was an I didn't really plan. I didn't necessarily know exactly what it would be like.
Yeah.
But going on what you said, one of the huge benefits was, you know, when you're teaching and you have a nice building and they're hitting outside, everybody just reacts to the ball and they react. It doesn't even matter if what they did was dramatically better. They just react to the ball. Whereas inside, I could turn the ball off if I want.
Right.
Right. I think that's a powerful learning tool, to be able to turn that off and get them more in touch and more in tune with either how their body's moving or, like you said, how the path or the whatever it is. They're way more focused on that than they are the ball.
Yeah. I mean, I think you said it so well. I mean, McLean used to have this thing called the elimination theory, which you probably heard of. And essentially it's just like eliminate as much as possible until they can do it. You know, so maybe it's like, hey, I'm just eliminating the golf course and we're just learning this new move on the range. Or maybe it's, hey, we're going to eliminate the ball and we're just going to hit tees or a foam ball. Or, hey, we're going to eliminate the club and you're just going to do it with your arms and body. Hey, let's just do it with the body. Like, obviously you can break it down to like a variety of different points, but I think as you just mentioned, that's definitely a lot easier to do inside. You can film a lot more swings. So you have people do practice swings without a ball and there's no camera or nothing to give them any sort of like satisfaction from it. They're going to get pretty bored of doing these practice swings, even if you tell them it's great for them. Right. But if every time they do it, they get like, in a sense, like you call it a rating, like it's green, yellow, red, or they can at least even just see it and be like, hey, look how much better this is. Even if it's 2D, you can use lines. You know, then they're kind of getting that like reward system for the action, which is, you know, going to cause more of that memory or skill acquisition. So, I mean, I think that part is big to me. And then as we both know, generally as those things get better, like I'm never going to be the guy that says like, you need to get worse before you get better. I mean, you might hit some shots that are not as good on your way, right? Because you're not finding it. But by the end of the lesson, they haven't at least hit certain shots that are a lot better than when they came in, like I failed. So as long as I can get them to commit to that for a little bit, generally at the end of the lesson, it's like in a much better spot. I think on the range without any video, especially earlier in my career, that was a little tougher, right? I mean, it's tougher to demand respect when you're younger, when you're a newer teacher, and also when you don't have things to kind of back you up. And so, you know, hopefully now I'm kind of got the best of both worlds with the tech and, you know, somewhat of a resume. But it's I think very helpful just to have things to make people feel like, hey, I'm accomplishing something, whether it's a good shot or it's a bad shot, I'm still accomplishing things.
I thought too, when you talked a few minutes ago, you talked about basically like the four things it takes to hit a good shot. I thought it was brilliant. And I always start a lesson with like the four kind of things I'm looking for. But I thought it was great because of how simple it was. Right. And there's so much stuff out there, and you get these people that come in, and I'm not downgrading anybody that gets crazy technical in their teaching, but I think that there's a real value and with a teacher that has the ability to make it seem simple and achievable, if nothing else. Like when you say those four things, that seems achievable. Like I right. can do that. Right.
Right.
You
right.
know? And I think that's got to be one reason of your success. And obviously you're having enormous success and well-deserved, but the ability to take something that's can be overwhelming and complex and boil it down to four things and get people to do it is it's a huge talent and a huge art to do that.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I'm sure, like you said, you're kind of on the same page there. I mean, I think two things. I mean, one is, no matter kind of what you believe in or, maybe you focus on a little bit more. I mean, the goal of all of those things is to create those four things. Like you're not right. doing it to swing slower or to hit it more on the heel or to have a bad path face ratio. You're obviously doing it to achieve those things. So you can kind of work backwards from there to an extent. But also I remember, Joey Wurtenberger at McLean, he'd have a lot of really good players that he'd coach, and they'd ask him all these technical questions. He's like, dude, you're not trying to be a golf coach and instructor. You're trying to be a player. He's like, you don't need to know all of right. this shit. He's like, you just need to know these one or two things that pertain to your swing. And that's really all it is. I mean, if we're going to get a blood test, I don't need to know the 120 things and what they all mean. I need to know the couple things I need to work on. And that's fine. I'm not going to ask him what XYZ enzyme is if everything's fine. And so I think that's something that's, especially it's funny, like you'd think in some ways, like analytical people are great because you can kind of like explain things to them, but then they can get over analytical. And it almost is like, you're trying to get them out of their own way. And you're like trying to give them like an unlesson where it's like, it's a Jerry Moulds thing. Like, just don't worry about this stuff. Like, let me just knock your seven thoughts down to these two. And so I think, like you said, just simplifying it and just being like, these are the two things that matter. I think you said at the beginning, like, what are the one or two things that really cause, even if there is 10 things you want to point out, which I would never do, but 10 things you see, let's say, before you say it, even like, what are the two things that are causing the domino effect or ripple effect for all these other things? Like you see someone coming through like this. Oh, I'm sure there's something that happened beforehand. They didn't have a perfect swing and just all of a sudden decided to do
something, right.
So, yeah, I think that's so key because it's like, they're coming at the end of the day to get better, not to know how smart you are, or how much you know.
Yeah. I think that's a testament to your ability and one of the reasons that I think people watch the stuff you do on Golf Pass and all of that is it's relatable, right? And it's understandable. And we can't ever forget that, the vast majority of the people that are watching us probably haven't read The Golf Machine or something, right? Or they're not members, they're not members of like a golf science group on Facebook, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
And so that's one reason I think your stuff does so well. That's why I wanted to have you on. I think it's because the ability to do that engages golfers and makes them better, And if you can tell a person one thing, no matter how simple it is, and they go play the best golf, they're a student for life. And it really doesn't even matter if what you told them is accurate, as long as when they go do it, they play great golf,
Right. Yeah. No, 100%. 100%. And that's even funny, even to the point of like, I sometimes, and I'm sure you do too, like just try to sprinkle in at the end of the lesson, maybe like a little pitching or a little bit of this or that, because like, you can't always control, even if it's the best players in the world, like day-to-day ball striking, like some days a little better, some days a little worse, but if you give someone a lesson, and even if the ball striking is the same, but their score is a little lower because they pitched a little bit better, they're going to be like, dude, I played so much better. Thanks. And you're like, well, you might hit it even the same, but you still, scored a little bit better. And then obviously if they hit it better and their short game is a little bit better, that kind of combination helps a ton and they see a pretty big difference. But yeah, I mean, I love geeking out on all that stuff. There's a lot still to learn. I love going to like the open forum and, obviously all the different Facebook groups and just going to certifications and talking to teachers like yourself and like, having a beer and really like diving into some of the nitty gritty. But I think to the person in front of you, it's like, okay, how can you extrapolate all of that? And then just say it like, okay, well, if you're talking about load and a loading or whatever, like I have a drill in the golf fix. It's like flip a light switch up that's in front of you and then turn it back, like just simple stuff that gets them to do all these mechanical things without them really having to always know how they did it.
All right. Last question. Favorite drill.
Yeah, drill.
Or give me one of them. You don't have to pick the favorite. Just give me one. I know, because I know you've given out a bunch of them.
I don't even know I can answer that. I feel like I have favorite Jills maybe for certain issues, but
my favorite low point drill.
I was kind of going to go that route a little bit. I mean, I really like this, like, kind of, it's super simple, but I just think it helps because it gets you to, like, turn, tilt, shift kind of all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, if, like, the body's working pretty well and your setup's not, like, just absolutely awful, then, like, you're probably going to be decent at impact. You know, I think a lot of times the arms and the club are going to be affected at least first by the body. I'm not saying the arms and club can't then affect the body because, you know, if obviously you're out of position, you might adjust. But I just kind of like, I'll put like a Swiss ball down on the ground, like a yoga ball, and I'll put like a mobility stick behind someone's back. I'll have them turn. They have to touch the ball, glide forward, and then touch the ball. And so it's kind of getting them to turn, tilt, and shift all in one motion. And then you put a club in their hands. And for the most part, they kind of have that cadence and that rhythm of, you know, rotating while tilting and shifting before they, turn the other way. And but to be honest, I also just do the most simple stuff ever, like a lot. And I'll just almost always have two tees side by side with their ball so that they can always see where they're hitting. Like, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I almost never have them hit a ball without there being tees on each side. Like, it doesn't mean it's like confining and necessarily always super close, but just some sort of reference of like where the low point should be, reference of where the toe and the heel is, I think just helps the contact. And I think at the end of the day,
that's good.
Golfers almost care more about contact than the direction. Like, mm-hmm. They flush one, they have a high smash factor on a 7, it's 1-4 something. They look, I already know they're going to be happy, even if it goes right. Tour players are probably a little different because they hit the center of the face a lot. But, you know, the average golfer, like, they don't experience that all the time. So if they do, it's like, oh, yeah, it's a little right, but God, I hit that so good. You know, you hear that a lot. So I think that that's, you know, just awareness of that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I would say probably, long story short, just kind of getting their turns, tilts, and shifts aligned and making it just feel pretty natural for them and rhythmic.
That's awesome. Well, thanks. One, enjoyed the opportunity to get to meet you down there or over there, up there in Orlando, wherever it is. And
up for you, I think.
Up for me today.
Yeah.
Appreciate you taking the time. I know how crazy your travel schedule is. Looking forward. Hopefully we can do this again sometime. Really.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Great stuff. Great insight. Keep up all the great stuff you're doing, man. You're making a difference for golfers out there, and it's needed.
Thanks, Tony. Really appreciate it. And I got to pick your brain at some point coming up here too.
Anytime. I prefer it to be over a beer.
That sounds good. I'm in.
We'll do it. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks. See you, man.
Bye-bye.